Okay.
And please make sure you have one. Before we actually begin, while the stragglers are still straggling, I'll just mention that if anybody would like digital copies of the things that I refer to that I have digitally, if you email me, I can send you whatever I have. You can have them. I have almost everything on the computer. Okay. I will begin with a little vignette from my summer, this past summer. As many of you know, as some of you know, I spent 1 week in August this past summer on a Tikva conference. Some of you are familiar with the Yale program for high school students. This was not what this was. I was not a participant getting a stipend and a participant. I was invited as a spectator to come witness the type of work that this organization, Tikva, does. Basically, in a nutshell, Tikva does big ideas, Torah concepts involving worldly forces, Torah Lamada, Torah Derech Eretz, if you will. And the particular conference that I was invited to as a spectator were for yeshiva guys. And I mean yeshiva guys. Yeshivas that I haven't even heard of, the most left wing of which, let's say, would be Ner Yisrael in Baltimore at best. The real deal, brisk, near the works. And the idea was to find the Yechidei Skula and the Yeshiva Shevelt. And these guys were, some of them were older, these got married children, 30, 35-year-olds, etc. To find the Yechidei Skula, intelligent boys who are open to worldliness, find them, kidnap them from yeshiva, it was Ben Azmanim, but kidnap them from yeshiva, and expose them to great thinkers and literature and politics and economics, and try to develop leadership from the, within the Torah community for the issues that affect the world, and to help them be better advocates, perhaps in the American political process. If we, they've never been exposed to economics and politics, and they don't know about the logic pro or con about a free market society, or gay marriage is the topic these days. So what should the Jewish, what should the political view be based on Jewish values, and how do we, look, it was fascinating. And it was really intelligent guys. To sum up, one guy summed it up. He said, this is really great. Because until now, the guys like me who dabbled in this stuff, we had to do it like in the dorm when nobody was watching. We had to read books that we weren't allowed to read and have discussions, being gavra legavra, that it's batala. And now I get to come here to Tikva, and not only isn't it batala, I'm called an intellectual and they give me a stipend. And therefore, that's what it was. And I was a spectator on this program. I promised that I wouldn't participate. I wouldn't open my mouth. I would just watch and soak in. That didn't happen. And I became an active participant in these violent, really exciting conversations. And it was like being back in yeshiva. It was gishmak. And the guys, at their closing session, when they were giving feedback, I was honored. They even mentioned to the Haredi establishment that was part of working with Tikva on this, how much they appreciated having Rabbi Katz there, because it really helped balance some of the issues and helped them. I was so honored. It was really great. At one point in the program, I think it was, we were sitting over one of the meals, I turned to a group of these guys, and I said, I hate to break the news to you guys, but you guys are modern Orthodox. And they, no, that was like I cursed them. How dare I call yeshiva guys modern Orthodox? And I said, think about it. You're into the world. You're well-read. You're balanced. You're da-da-da-da-da. And I had to explain what I mean by modern Orthodoxy is not the bad of modern Orthodoxy. In other words, not the modern Orthodoxy that gets the bad reputation of cutting corners religion. No. You are the Rav Salad. You are it. You are what we a Torah Umada. And they found that weird, but it made for interesting conversation. And then I made a mistake. I said, now let's talk about Zionism. And suddenly, intelligent guys, capable of the most complex conversations, even in a worldly discussion, applying discussion, they turned to mush on me. And they started venting all of the anti-Zionist propaganda that they themselves don't even necessarily believe, as you'll see. They're just not Zionists. And there was no possibility of intelligent conversation. And I was frustrated. I'm not trying to convert you. But we're having such intelligent conversations about if we can talk about different ways to view gay marriage, we can't talk about pros and cons about the state of Israel? And it was an impossible conversation. And it dawned on me that this issue, which everybody is passionate about it unbearably, is the issue. All the other issues, when you strip it down, you can have a conversation about women in learning, and women, it's usually the women's issues. We can talk until I can have that conversation, but you mention Israel, and it's over. And I think the why is easy, because it goes right to the cuts right to the chase of our own identity. We're trained this way, that either you're a Zionist or you're not, and we're not at the stage when we can talk intelligently, that I think we need to be. And therefore, in our, and I use that in quotes because I'm not trying to brand you as part of any one particular community, but let's assume you're an MNY, let's assume that on some level you would identify in the modern Orthodox Zionist camp on this issue, for argument's sake. So if I use our, I disclaim it in that sense, so I don't have to apologize each time. But if that's the case, it's still important for you to be able to engage intelligently on the other side, not to just be sucked into the Zionist propaganda that we've all been brought up with, and to speak the sources and understand the issues and understand where the other side may be coming from, and to understand how complex this topic really is. Despite the complexity, that doesn't have to negate our, your, however you want to define that, practices, how you view Yom HaAtzma'ut, and ultimately with the halakhic decisions that we make regarding the hotbed issues of Yom HaAtzma'ut in its celebration, in particular, Sfira and Challah. Let's put it this way. I know it looks like on your chart that there's two camps, but there aren't. There are three. There's the Zionist camp, traditionally part of the modern Orthodox world, doesn't have to connect, but it often does. The Zionist camp, and the Zionist camp philosophically thinks that the modern state of Israel is a positive thing, is a God-given event of a positive nature. Some people in the Zionist camp will ascribe pre-messianic or even messianic elements to it, although you don't have to go that far. It can still be a positive religious event given by God that we view positively. That is one, I'm simplifying, but one general camp. The other camp is probably not the camp that you're really exposed to. And that's what I call the anti-Zionist camp, otherwise known perhaps as the Terei Karta, popularized by Satmar, and those are the sources that we are going to be learning. But it's a total opposite extreme that probably doesn't affect your life too much. And that is the camp that says that the state of Israel is a bad thing, might even be a curse, might even be a punishment from God. Even if it's not a punishment from God, it's in sin. That camp exists. That camp is source-based. We will learn it. We will discuss it. But that's not usually who you interface with. Usually the camp that you interface with, other than your own camp, let's say, is the middle-of-the-road camp, which is not anti-Zionist or Zionist. You could call them non-Zionist, if you will. Or it's not on the agenda. And that's the camp that will say, listen, there are positives to the state of Israel, I don't deny that, but I don't necessarily ascribe godly intervention into the founding of the state of Israel. It was a political event, world forces, miraculous. One person's miracle is another person's, I don't know, 69 Mets, 86 Red Sox, like 95 Red Sox, whatever the case may be. 2005 Red Sox. 2004. I know, I got it. It's painful. I know, I got it. Whatever the case may be, a miracle, that's already, who are we to know? And there are a lot of negatives in the modern state of Israel. It's secular, it's not based on religious values. The current government, even no longer, but the previous government, one will claim, with Yair Lapid at the head, even anti-religious, which isn't necessarily true, but so they'll claim, etc., etc., etc. And therefore, I'm not anti-Zionist. I don't think everything here is a curse and a punishment. But to go the other extreme, and certainly to ascribe to it messianic underpinnings, that I'm not ready to do. And I'm going to stay pretty much pyrrhic about it at best. But what happens? In an effort to counter the Zionist camp, the middle-of-the-road camp often uses the rhetoric that they don't believe in. The Satmar rhetoric. And they will throw at you the anti-Zionist sources that if they really believed it, they'd be living in a different world also. But in order to counter you, the Zionist, that's what they taught. And you, the Zionist, who's never really learned these sources, is stuck because they throw a Gemara in your face which exists. It's black on white until it's not, but it's black on white, and you've never seen it because your Zionist teachers never exposed you to it. See the problem? So what I would like to do with you is, there's a source sheet obviously here. Let me just make sure I got my right source sheet there. I want to go through with you the main source on the topic of the state of Israel. We're not talking about Aliyah per se, but the concept of a state, a founded Jewish state in the land of Israel pre-Mashiach, and that's the Gemara in Ketubot that you may or may not be familiar with. And we'll mention some other things that come along with it. And with that, we're going to analyze this chart. I hope to get through all of it. I don't know if I'll mention every point, which organizes for you by subtopic and in the two different camps how to understand this Gemara. The bulk of the information that I'm discussing with you can be found in a book, a pamphlet really, compiled by Rav Shlomo Avinair, which culled all of the sources in dealing with that Gemara, pro and con, in the Gemara in Ketubot. So it's there, this source book, the Avinair's work has been translated into English in full, including the footnotes. I hate when they translate things without the footnotes. Including the footnotes, this I have online. So if you would like this to be able to read it in the original, you can have that as well. And that's where a lot of this material comes from, although not all of it. And that will help organize some of the thoughts. And then I want to talk about the particular bullet point halakhic issue, Sfira and Hallel, which will affect us next week directly, but just to give it the connection to what I just said by manner of introduction. If you believe that the state of Israel is a curse and it was in sin, is a punishment, then celebrating Yom HaTzma'ut in any way does not even begin. There's no Hallel to discuss. We could talk about Slichos and Tearing Kriya. But there's no Hallel to be had. You're not going to break the rules of Sfira for it. It's a non-issue. Even if you hold in the middle camp, I see positives in the state of Israel, but I'm not ready to ascribe God activity to it or to give it messianic feeling or miraculous thing. And you're not going to break Sfira for that either, and you're not going to start saying Hallel even without a bracha either, because you're not ascribing godly intervention in a positive way to it. If, however, you are in the Zionist camp, then that doesn't automatically mean you'll break Sfira. And that does not automatically mean you'll say Hallel, nor does it automatically mean you'll say Hallel with a bracha, of course. But then it's a conversation. So we need to have that conversation. But if you're not in that camp, and if you are in the extreme camp or in the middle camp, it's a non-issue. So I do want to relate for us, assuming that many of us, all of us, some of us are in that Zionist camp, about how we would guide you in terms of the Hallel and how we act in MMY. We don't have a minion here, so the Hallel is not the issue, but the Sfira is, and give it that perspective. Okay, so we have to do that as well. When we're all done, I have a funny story to tell you about the source sheets, which I will segue into what I hope is a closing, meaningful little vort that I found, and with that we will end as well, and hopefully we'll have time for questions. Ready? Okay. The Gemara in question is the Gemara in Ketubot. Anybody who wants to debate with you, we'll debate you about this Gemara. So let's read it, see what it says, and then deal with it. Most people will quote two lines of this Gemara without any context and without the whole thing. And they will tell you there's a Gemara called the Shalosh Shavuot. How many of you have heard about that in the past? Look how few. Amazing, isn't it? Proving my point. You can't be an intelligent Zionist unless you know how to deal with this Gemara. This Gemara is what seems black and white and is a problem. It's called the Gemara of the Shalosh Shavuot. And they usually will quote you the two lines in it of the Shalosh Shavuot. But you need its context to fully understand it and how to deal with it. The Gemara is dealing with the general topic about the positives of living in Israel. And you know all them. You live in Chutz Laaretz, you have no God. You live in Israel, then you have God. You're familiar with that, I assume, right? Okay. So that's this Gemara. It's grounds for divorce if one spouse doesn't want to move. That's the Gemara. It's the Gemara at the end of Ketubah. For example, El Olam Alecha Kol Adar B'Chutz Laaretz Ki Ilu Oved Avodah Kol Chavim. That's the context. You live in Chutz Laaretz, that's bad. You're like, oh no, I don't worship, right? No. Rabbi Zeira. Hade Kimishtame Minei D'Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Zeira went out of his way to avoid bumping into Rabbi Yehuda. He avoided him. If he saw Rabbi Yehuda in the base medrash, she went to a different base medrash. She saw him on the block, he crossed the street. He did not want to bump into Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Debayu Mesach La'Eretz Yisrael. Because Rabbi Zeira wanted to make Aliyah. And he knew that Rabbi Yehuda was opposed. To honor Rabbi Yehuda, what was Rabbi Yehuda's position? Kol ha'olem mi-Babel Eretz Yisrael, Ober Ba'aseh, anybody who moves from Babel to Israel is violating a positive commandment. Shene'amar, as it says in Yirmiyahu, following the Gemara down, that's Rashi in the middle there, Be'Babel yavo v'shamehiyu ad yom pakdiyo tam ne'um Hashem. Because Yirmiyahu tells us, you will be in Babel, that's where you will go, and that is where you will stay until such time as I call you back. Now, simple interpretation, how do you know if you've been called back? Mashiach, right? Okay? So, Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion that no, Rabbi Zeira, you, even as an individual, cannot go back to Israel. It's a violation of this pasuk. The Rabbi Zeira, how did Rabbi Zeira counter that? Hahi b'kli sharistin. That pasuk is talking about the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. Those need to stay in Babel. That has nothing to do with Aliyah. The Rabbi Yehuda, so how does Rabbi Yehuda counter that? Ktiv, krach rina, he says, okay, I have another pasuk. You're right, okay, bonagid. But there's another pasuk that has to keep you in Chutz La'aretz. What's that pasuk? Hishbati etchem benot Yerushalayim b'tzva'ot o ba'ayalot ha'sadeh v'chule. Now this is quoting a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. If you turn your page sideways, you can see one of three times. Get the number three? One of three times where this pasuk exists. Let's look at the first one. Hishpati etchem benot Yerushalayim b'tzva'ot o ba'ayalot ha'sadeh. Im ta'iru ve'im ta'oruru et ha'ava ad shetechbats. I, God, have made you, the children of Yerushalayim, swear. B'tzva'ot o ba'ayalot ha'sadeh. Which is hard to translate, but let's loosely translate that you are like deer and the ibex of the field. If, chas v'shalom, ta'iru, you are to wake up, ve'im ta'oruru, and if you are to wake up, ad et ha'ava, until you would wake up your love for Zion, ad shetechpats, until I want. In other words, I'm making you promise, Jewish people, chas v'shalom, should you even think of waking up to Zionism? Until I call you back. That's the simple pshat in that pasuk. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you see, chas v'shalom in ta'iru in ta'oruru. Hishbati etchem, you can't go back to Israel. You're not supposed to have Zionist feelings until God calls you, i.e. Mashiach. The Rabbi Zeira, how does Rabbi Zeira respond? Hahi shalo ya'alu Yisrael b'choma, and the asterisk there doesn't show you the other girsa, or kechoma. No, says Rabbi Zeira. That means you shouldn't come back either on the wall or like a wall. Now, what does it mean, on a wall? What's the problem with going up on a wall? What does a wall represent? Strength, right. The wall protects the city. So, shelo ya'alu b'choma. That means that we shouldn't attack. That doesn't mean that me, little Rabbi Zeira, can't just buy my house in Ramat Beit Shemesh and go plow my field back there. Or kachoma. What does it mean, like a wall? What's the imagery there? Picture, I don't know, dodgeball, not dodgeball, Red Rover. Red Rover. Kachoma. Think soccer. Who plays soccer? And there's about to be a penalty kick, so you make a wall like this. The guy, a group, a line of defense, a line. Kachoma, and a wall, okay? So either in force, in a wall, or something like that. That means by force or in a large group, we'll see this in a minute more, that's what it means. And again, it doesn't mean little me, Rabbi Zeira. So that pasuk isn't relevant. But Rabbi Yehuda, so what does Rabbi Yehuda respond? Hishpati achrina ktiv. It says it more than once. Look again, there's three times I have that pasuk. Three. So okay, one time it means by force, but the second time it means even you, Rabbi Zeira, as an individual. How does Rabbi Zeira respond? Rabbi Zeira, hahi Mivayaleke to Rabbi Yossi b'Rav Chanina. And here's your Shalosh Shavuot that everybody quotes. No. I agree with you, Rabbi Yehuda, if it's within the parameters of the three things that I'm about to say. But those things don't apply to individuals. You, Rabbi Yehuda, is telling me not to make Aliyah even as an individual. You're wrong, Rabbi Yehuda. I'm going to avoid you in the base matters. I agree with you, though, that Zionism is usher if it is within the following Shavuot. To Amar Gimel Shavuot Halalu, Lema, what are they? Achat. Remember, there's three psukim, so three of them. Achat. Shalo Yalu Yisrael Bechoma. Whatever that means, we have to still define. Achat. Shehishbi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. Shalo Yimardu B'umot HaOlam. You took a second promise, Jewish people, not to rebel against your hosts, the non-Jews. Now, you might rebel by leaving, so those things overlap, but another form, perhaps, of rebellion. Va'achat, and what was the third shvua? It wasn't on us. It was on the non-Jews themselves. Shehishviya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, El Dei Kol Chavim, Shelo Yishta'abdu Bahem B'Yisrael Yoter Midai. The non-Jews also took a part in this promise, not to overdo their persecution while we were living there. Shalosh Shavuot, based on the three psukim. If you take a look at the three psukim, the first two are identical. Perek Bet and Shir Hashirim, Perek Gimel and Shir Hashirim, word for word identical.
Wait, can you just repeat what you say?
The three things are, we have to still translate them. Shalo Ya'alu Kichoma, whatever that means, with a wall. And again, obviously we need to define that better. Two, that we're not going to rebel against our non-Jewish hosts. However that would be, and again, leaving would be an act of rebellion also. We're supposed to stay put in Golis. And three, the non-Jews swore not to over-persecute us while we're there. Two on us, one on the non-Jews. One sec, I'll take questions right. Look at the three psukim. The first two are the same. The third one is different. What's different about the third one? It's missing those middle weird words, bitzvaot o ba'ayalot ha-sadeh. Okay? So you'll notice structurally, the first two psukim is one group of people, whoever that is, ayalot with that, and the last one is different. So can you see structurally how the first two are the Jews and the last one, even if you can't explain why, but is different? Okay, good. Turn back to the Gemara. Let's continue. So now I have Shalosh Shavuot that applies on some level, either with force or by a group, not Rabbi Zeira as an individual. The Rabbi Yehuda. How does Rabbi Yehuda come up with his Shavuot if he's using Hishpat Yechem even for the individual? Im ta'iru v'im ta'oruru p'tiv. They mean the same thing. It's doubled up. So I take the extra Hishpati, but ta'iru v'ta'oruru, and I double it, and I get the two Shavuot that the Jewish people... It's just different mechanically. It doesn't matter for us. Rabbi Yehuda also agrees with Rabbi Zeira that there's Shalosh Shavuot. He just uses one of the psukim even on an individual. The Rabbi Zeira. And what about Rabbi Zeira? Mivayalei kinder Rabbi Levi. Ta'amar sheish Shavuot. What happens if you take the three Shavuot and then ta'iru ta'oruru and double them each? How many do you wind up with? Six. So there are three more Shavuot. There are six Shavuot. What are the other Shavuot? Sheish Shavuot halalu lama. The extra three to get up to six, what are they? Tlatahani da'amram, the three that we already said. Okay? Eincha, it's not the three we already said. There's three more. What are the three? Shelo yigolu et haketz. You will not reveal. If you get nevuah of when Mashiach's going to come, you're not allowed to reveal it. Shelo, what's the next word? Yirchaku. Now, there's a girsa issue as well. Rashi quotes it. Either yirchaku or yidchaku. They mean the exact opposite of each other, so it's a problem, right? What does it mean, lo yirchaku et haketz? I'm promising that I will not delay Mashiach. How would you delay Mashiach? Chabad girls, where are you when I need you? How would you delay Mashiach? How do you bring Mashiach? You build another brick. How do you build another brick? Every mitzvah builds another brick, right? So how do you delay? How do you remove a brick? Aveira, right? So lo yirchaku et haketz. We promise not to delay Mashiach, says Rashi, by sinning. Okay? However, if the girsa is shalo yidchaku haketz, what does that mean? Docha. Don't push. Don't push for Mashiach, says Rashi. How would you push for Mashiach? Davening. Don't ask for Mashiach too much from God. It will come when God wants. He's a big boy. He doesn't need your help. So don't yidchaku et haketz. Two possibilities. V'shelo yigolu hasod lo de kochavim. And don't give away the secret. Tosfos points out that it's the secret of how the Jewish calendar works. But okay. Not so important. Okay? Don't reveal that to the non-Jews. Now look at the end of the Gemara. Bitzvaot o ba'ayalot ha-sadeh. The third one, right? Oh, bitzvaot o ba'ayalot. Sorry, not the third one. The first two. Bitzvaot o ba'ayalot ha-sadeh. What do those words mean? Get ready to be scared. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Amar Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYisrael, God says, Imatem mekayimim ha-shvua mutar. If you keep the shalosh shavuot, meaning what? If you stay in Babel, if you don't daven for Mashiach, if you don't delay, if you don't push, if you don't use force, if you don't come as a group, if you sit like good sheep, and I use that term on purpose on this Erev Yom HaShoah, if you sit like sheep in Gullus under the control of the non-Jews, mutav, excellent. Ve'in lav, but if you don't, and if you become Zionists, ani matir et bisarchem, I will allow your flesh, says Rashi, to become hefker. Kitzvaot uka'ayalot hasadeh. Like the animals of the field. Your flesh will be hefker. This book, look how thick it is. It's from the Satmarov. By Yoel Moshe. It's cute. His name was Yoel Moshe, and there's a pasuk in Chumash about Vayoel Moshe be'eretz haTorah hazot. How cute is that? So he took the name of the book. This is the anti-Zionist book from the Satmarov. This isn't some guy in yeshiva who decided to be an anti-Zionist and gave some propaganda. It is excellent. I strongly recommend that you read it. He goes through, I haven't gone through it all, but I've gone through a lot. I tried to make an outline of all of the different sections until I found it in the back of the book. They did that for me already. Oh well. But it was fun. Still, it was good to do it. It's excellent. He goes through all of the Makos, and he goes through both other ways of reading it too, the Zionist way of reading it, and he tells you why he doesn't think. It's excellent. You can't ignore this book. So by the way, if you're ever faced with a Satmar or in a B'nai B'rak type thing and somebody starts throwing this at you, instead of arguing with them, the first thing I would always tell people that was funny is, oh yes, the Vayoel Moshe, I've read it. By the way, have you? Most anti-Zionists have never read the book. They just were brought up that way. So be a good Zionist and actually read the book. Argument over. Because at least you've read it. Okay? It's excellent. But if you read the introduction, you will cry. And most people start a book by reading the introduction. The introduction discusses how the state of Israel is a disaster and it was the cause of the Holocaust. And what was the proof that it was the cause of the Holocaust? We violated the Shalosh Shavuot. And what does the Gemara say is the punishment if you violate the Shalosh Shavuot? Your meat, think Holocaust, your flesh literally will be hefker, to be eaten like the stray animals in the field. That is scary. And therefore, we need to take this seriously. This is no joke, folks. We have a Gemara. It seems black on white. There's not much to do with it. That very clearly says, okay, individuals should live in Eretz Yisrael. We get that. But let's assume we pass in Rabbi Zeira and not Rabbi Yehuda. But even Rabbi Zeira agrees that as a group, as a choma, we still have to define all of these things. It's asur. Okay? Hold questions. Write them if you need to, because otherwise I would lean at it at the end, but I whatever. Okay? If you would like to find the counter to this, besides the Rav Aviner that I gave you, another counter sefer that's excellent, it's broken to bits, and I think somebody else has another copy of it, is Ema Banim Smecha. Ema Banim Smecha was written by Rav Shlomo Tachtel during the Holocaust. He was from Hungary. He was a chassid. And so to speak, he did Zionist tshuva, and he realized, based on the events of the Holocaust, how Zionism is correct, the opposite of the Satmarov, and he counters it all, and it's just a beautiful book. This is the English version. It was translated by Rabbi Moshe Lichtman, who, God willing, will be giving Shir Oreach here and selling his books on May 11th. He's an old high school buddy, NCSY buddy from Elizabeth, New Jersey. He taught in MMY for many years. Anyway, he's the translator of this book. Be aware, there's also, if you don't want to read the long version, there is a short and abridged version of the book as well. I don't know if he'll be selling it or he'll be donating it to us, and then we'll give it to you, whatever it is. But just know there's an abridged version of the highlights as well. It's excellent reading. One year, there was a girl in MMY, Aviva Cantor. You've seen her on the MMY website. Talk about Night Seder in one of those My MMY videos. She did a comparative study. That was what she did during Night Seder, of the Vayoel Moshe to the Ema Banim Smecha and how they each read the same sources and just read them differently. Really cool. Anyway, so I mentioned that. Okay. Tachtel. Shlomo, I believe, is the first name. Tachtel. And he died in the Shoah, and they found the book afterwards, and it was published. It, really beautiful, beautiful, beautiful work. Okay. Turn over your chart. I know we still have to look at the Rambam, but turn over to your chart, and let me just walk you through some of the ways to deal with this Gemara. I'm doing this outside. I'll mention some textual references. And again, if you really want to do it more, there's a lot of reading you can do, and I'll mention. Okay, I've organized this, even though it's not absolute, into four subtopics. There are four issues you need to deal with. One, we're meant to be in Galut. We were punished. How dare we walk out of that early? Okay, so that's the first topic there. The issue of Choma. That's the prohibition. So what does it really mean? And what doesn't it mean? So we have to deal with that. The Shavuot in general. What did it mean that we took a Shvuah? Does that always apply? Does it sometimes apply? Not the Choma itself, the concept of the Shavuah in general. And then finally, is this Gemara even halakhic? Or is it an Agadita? And if so, how does that impact? And how else can we deal with it in a more general, on a more general level? Okay, so that's your chart. So let's go, I'll go in order, even though I may at some point skip, let's see. Galut. What did the Pasuk say in the Gemara? How long do you have to stay in Bavel? Ad Yom Pakdi. Right? What did the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim say about the Shavuah? Vishvati Yechem Benot Yerushalayim in Ta'ir V'in Ta'oruru Ad Sheh Tekpats. Do not come back until I call you or want you. Now, you assume that God wanting us, look at the anti-Zionist thing, is only in Mashiach. That's what we all said, right? That's a lot. Mashiach is the way we get called back. And in fact, there's a Maharal. You should know there's two Maharals, and they don't exactly contradict, but they don't exactly agree either. There's a Maharal. There's one in the Gemara in Ketubot, and there's one somewhere else. I don't remember where the Maharal says, and again, it's in the footnotes here. It's also a scary one. He says, and the non-Jews are going to torture you, and you're going to die, and you're going to be persecuted. It's not going to be good for you. And still, you can do nothing, ad shetekpats, until you get called back. That's the Maharal, folks. It's nothing to sneeze at. And that is the anti-Zionist camp. It's Mashiach. And speaking of sneezing, it's Mashiach. And the Maharal says it very explicitly. I don't care how bad Gullus is, you're stuck. How would the Zionist camp respond to this? First of all, there are other ways to be called back. Who says it has to be God with a baskol who comes down and sends Mashiach? I hear that, but there's other ways. For example, what if the entire non-Jewish world says you can come back to Israel? For example, when did that happen in Jewish history? Koresh, it happened in Babel already. It happened in Rishon to Bayit Sheni. And now, the state of Israel was not created because a group of Jews decided to take up arms and rebel. The state of Israel was created because the UN on November 29th, 1947, had a vote based on the Balfour Declaration back of 1917. The British people are controlling Israel. The Brits decide to give it to Israel. Okay, who says the Brits have the right? But the United Nations, or then the League of Nations, and they have every right to the countries of the world agreed. We have permission. That is a sign that God is allowing this to happen. Achitekbats, it's Yom Pakti. Also, if we now woke up, for thousands of years we had no Zionist, political Zionist ambitions. It was never there. But now we do. God was waiting for us. So now that we woke up, look, it's happening. We woke up. There are other Gemaras that we're not going into, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, do you know how you know when it's Ashalta de Geula? This is only if you give it Messianic things. You know how you know? When Israel blossoms. For 2,000 years, conquerors came to Palestine and tried to make the flowers grow, and they couldn't. It was a desert. The Jews come, and we drain the swamps. Wow! It's a Gemara. It's not Mark Twain. It's a Gemara. The Gemara tells us, Ein lecha keitz megula mizeh, and it quotes the psukim in the Chukotai of the positive part of the Tochacha, of the bracha that says, you're going to have fruit in Eretz Yisrael. Look! We have fruit in the Negev. You can get peppers without Kedusha Tshvit from the Dromar of Ah, folks. Ein lecha keitz megula mizeh, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's clearly Yom Pakdi. The horrors of the Gullus, there's another way to understand that Maharal did not mean the Shoah. We have paid our dues, folks. God wants us back. My God, what are we supposed to do? You're going to love this. Some people wrote that the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, is the biggest sign that God has woken up and he wants us back because the Gra was great. The students of the Gra wrote this. The students of the Gra wrote, now that we see the light of our Rebbe, Sounds like the Lubavitch, but now that we've seen the, and notice it's Lithuania, the light of my Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon, proves that the world is now not in darkness anymore, the Middle Ages are over, the Black Plague is over, we're back. And in fact, the Vilna Gaon spoke very positively about people coming to Israel. Why is Minhag Yerushalayim often Minhag HaGra? Because they were the first Yishuv, the Talmidim of the Gra, the ones who actually listened to the Gra and show up. In other words, I don't want to call the Gra Zionist exactly, but yeah. So the Gra proves, etc. And also, look at the miracles. Look at the miracles of the founding of the State of Israel. If you've seen any movie about the War of Independence, you know, the guy who throws the seltzer bottle down, the Davidka that you learned about in Sfat. Were you kidding? And I always like to say the very fact that anything works in this country is proof of God's intervention, because if you're Israeli, nothing works. But yet somehow it does. So there are miracles in this country, etc. Okay? So that would be a way, that's the way, and by the way, I'm not just giving you propaganda, these are all based on Makoros, and that's one way to do it. Okay, the Choma. The Choma. We mentioned this already. If it means by force, we didn't force anybody. We had permission. It's like Koresh. The anti-Zionists will claim, well, they'll quote David Ben-Gurion. You know what David Ben-Gurion once said about the United Nations? Do you know what the United Nations is in Hebrew, by the way? The Umot Meuchadot, United Nations, the So one time Ben-Gurion was attacked, like we're always attacking the UN, and he made the line about the UN. He said, shmu. So the Satmar will take a page out of David Ben-Gurion's book, and they'll say, shmu. Well, who's the United Nations? If you really needed permission, you know who you need to get permission from, I hate to say it? The Arabs, who've been living here for hundreds and hundreds of years since Golis Babel, meaning, well, you need them. If they want you back, okay, we can talk. But they don't want you back. So you don't have permission. And Koresh was, of course, a unique situation, and that's by Rishon and Sukkin and I don't know what, and therefore no go. Are we coming back Bichoma in one unit? What do you think? No. What's the biggest proof that we're not coming back in one unit? Right, most of you don't live here. So it's not a mass thing. It's widespread. It's very popular. Nefesh b'nefesh and flat, all that's nice. But no. And in fact, the Jewish people get yelled at in Babel for not coming back. They also didn't come back in the same term as used in the Gemara. You Jews in Babel didn't come back, kacholma. You didn't all come back. So we didn't all come back either. We're not back. Individual, it's in stages. We have a country, okay, but it's not a revolution, it's not, etc. How would the anti-Zionists say? We don't need every individual, but it's a political thing. Politically, there's a state. We force that state. We're back. We're back as a country, as an entity that violates the Shavuot. Okay? Everybody see that? Very simple. We can debate these, but everything I'm giving you is based on actual sources, Makorot, Rishon, not Rishon, really, Akronim, who said these things out of before there was a state of Israel, simply to understand the Gemara in Ketubot. The Shavuot themselves, again, this is a little bit easy, so I'll do it quickly. Maybe that only applies in Babel. After all, the whole starting point of the Gemara was B'Babel Yavo. It's talking about Babel, it's not talking about in modern times. Anti-Zionists would disagree. This is Hasidim. How many Hasidim in the room? Any Hasidim in the room? Real Hasidim. Hasidim, no, there's not a single. Where's Yedida? Yedida is coming back this afternoon. Yedida's already a Hasid. No Hasidim? I am. Wow, I love this year. No Hasidim. Okay, so then you can't appreciate real Hasidish Torah, but this is real Hasidish Torah. What? Oh, you're just shy. Oh, okay. I mean Hasidim who are into Hasidish Torah. You'll see what I mean in a minute. One suggestion is that the Shavuot only apply when the Jewish people are scared and are running and are feeling persecuted. However, when there's a natural l'shem shamayim yearn for Zion, not because we're scared, not aliyah miyira because they're killing people in France, but aliyah mi'ahava because of a yearning for Eretz Yisrael, then the Shavuot didn't apply in that case. Of course, the anti-Zionists would disagree. One Hasidic shavuot on this comes from the Ishbitzer Rebbe. The Ishbitzer Rebbe, this is already 1800s, it's before the State of Israel. The Ishbitzer Rebbe, we didn't go to Ishbitz, and either did anybody else on Heritage, but Midrashet Moriah and Shalavim were supposed to go to Ishbitz. But they have a bad schedule programming, and they always put in more than they can do, and they wound up not going. But they didn't go. But anyway, they were supposed to go to Ishbitz. The Ishbits of Rav said the following word. You know that there's the travels of Bnei Israel in the desert, and they each have a name at each place where they went. You're all familiar with this. The 25th place that they went in the desert is Chashmonai. Get it? How cute is that? 25. Chashmonai and Chanukah, the 25th. Okay. So people like to do that. The Ishbits of Rebbe said as follows. Vayisu mehar shafer. Okay, fine. Vayachanu b'charada. Vayachanu b'charada. When you are b'charada, when you are scared, what's the best thing to do? Vayachanu. Stay put. However, vayisu mecharada, the next pasuk, when you are ready to travel out of your fear, when you're done being afraid, then, the Gemara girls in my class will appreciate this, vayachanu b'makelot. Ah, okay. Then you should settle where? Makelot. Now, you could debate what makelot means. Either you should settle where it's song-filled, like a choir, or b'makelot, in groups, in communities, like Jewish communities, meaning Israel, etc. That's his word, okay? We're no longer b'charada. We're no longer b'charada. We're not scared. We're not sheep to the slaughter. We're excited. We have Jewish pride, and therefore the Shavuot are over. Here's a halakhic answer. There's three Shavuot, right? There's really six. There's three Shavuot. The Jews took how many of those Shavuot? Two. Who took the third? Non-Jews. It's a package deal, right? It wasn't two Shavuot. It's three Shavuot. It's a contract. There's a rule in Hilchos Shavuos. If you make a multiple part Shavua, and one side of the multiple part Shavua breaks their side, then the whole thing is null and void. Did the non-Jews violate their part of the deal to not over-persecute us?
Yep.
I hope you would all say yes on this Erev Yom HaShoah. Therefore, not that we're connecting the Holocaust to the state of Israel, which is a dangerous connection, but yeah, there's a connection. And immediately after the Shoah, guess what? Shavuot are over. And by the way, you don't have to go to the Shoah, let's be fair. You want to go to the Crusades, you want to go to Tach V'Tat, you want to go to the rest of 2,000 years in Jewish history, go right ahead. Okay, so that's part of the idea. They violated their part. The anti-Zionists will claim, no, it's three separate Shavuot. I know the Gemara is putting them all together. There is an opinion that the Shavuot were only for 1,000 years. I don't remember the source on that. I can look it up for you if you want. That the Shavuot were only for 1,000 years. 1,000 years will give you such a crimp in the neck. Anyone know what I'm talking about?
11.
No. Oh, it is 11.
It's 11.
Oh, okay. You're right. Okay. No, I was thinking it was 2,000-year-old men. No, you're right. It's 11. Anyway, it's here. I just have to look it up. The anti-Zionist view on that will be no. The 1,000-year thing is only God's part. After 1,000 years, God's welcome to call us back. But the Shavuot on our part still exists. Again, other people claim the Shavuot we took is only to build the Beit HaMikdash. It has nothing to do with Aliyah itself. That doesn't happen to make a lot of sense, I don't think, because if you read the text, it says, right there, it happens to say Aliyah. Okay. Rabbi Zeira. It's only one opinion. There's other opinions. There's other opinions. Who says we paskin like Rabbi Zeira? In fact, there is a Gemara in Yuma, I think, that quotes Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Notice they lived in Eretz Yisrael, who think that everybody should be living in Eretz Yisrael. So I think it's the Gemara Yuma.tet, I'm a bet. And they dawned on the people that are living in Babel and how they should be living here. So there's a debate whether we even paskin like the Shalosh Shavuot in the first place, although this Gemara seems like we really paskin like Reb Zeira with all the energy that it expends. How about Reb Zeira himself? There's a Gemara in Bav Metzia that tells us the end of this story. Reb Zeira makes Aliyah. He avoids Reb Yehuda, he makes Aliyah as an individual. And then he fasts for days and days and days because he realizes that what he learned in Babel was wrong. Doesn't tell us what was wrong, doesn't tell us this piece, but that in general, his Babylonian education wasn't positive, and he fasts that he should forget that which he learned in Babel. He's now seen the light that he's come to Eretz Israel and he's getting a proper education. Perhaps for some of you, your seminary students. So he davens that everything he learned until now is wrong. So again, it sounds like Rabbi Zeira himself might have retracted. Not necessarily true. Okay. Finally on this, and then I'll take a few questions before we move on to the next piece. Look back on your source sheet. The Ramban. Those in Bayot from the first semester recognize this. The Ramban holds there's a mitzvah to live in Israel. He says it's a mitzvah in every generation, even Bizman Galut. every generation, always, you can just read it in the underlines, in every generation, even in Galut, you must be here. It's Milchemet Mitzvah. You need to be here, you need to be here, you need to be here. What's the obvious question you have to ask in the Ramban? That's not the obvious question. He did get here. Okay? What about the Gemara? The Gemara says you shouldn't be here. How can the Ramban say, in every generation, even in Galut, you have to be here? The Megillat Esther. The Megillat, this is funny, actually. The Megillat Esther lived in the 16th century in Italy. People sometimes confuse him with a different guy by the same name, Yitzhak de Leon. There was also a Kabbalist who lived in Spain, died in 1490, by the same name. So people think that the Megillat Esther was written by the guy in Spain, but it's not. They've now done research, and we now know, etc. How did I find this out? Because someone once wanted to claim that the first halakhic source to invoke the Shalosh Shavuot was written in the 1800s. I prepare for the Shir. I see that the Megillat Esther wrote about it already earlier. So I write to my friend and I say, you know, I heard a shiur that you gave where you said the first guy to talk about it is the Avnei Nezer, the Sechet Sheva Rebbe in the 1800s. The Megillat Esther in the 1400s already writes about it. My friend writes back, he says, you mean 1600s, boy. And I go, no, I mean 1400s. Look, Wikipedia. And then I did a little more homework. Can you show me? No, that Wikipedia thing is wrong. So he told me I should change the Wikipedia. Hilula Kodesh, I cannot change Wikipedia. He said, that's the point of Wikipedia. I know, but anyway, so no, it's 1600s Italy. Anyway, the Megillat Esther, who's the main commentary, who comments to defend the Rambam, who doesn't count Aliyah Zemitzvah, against the attack of the Ramban, the Megillat Esther says to the Ramban, Shalosh Shavuot. Shalosh Shavuot, there can't be a mitzvah to live here. How do you defend the Ramban? Individuals have an aliyah mitzvah, always. Groups, only when we're not being persecuted. Only when we're not being persecuted. The Gemara Ketubah is always true on groups. That doesn't take away from the Ramban, that on individuals or when there's no persecution on a mitzvah. It's an agarata. This is not a halachic Gemara, so thank you, Rav Yitzchak de Leon of Italy, who puts it into a halachic framework. It's an agarata. It's very nice. Maybe there's a philosophy we should learn, but you don't have to take it practically. And at best, even if it's a halachic thing, it's a decree, not an isser. And we've decided not to listen to the decree. We're overriding God's will, so to speak, because it's not a halacha. God's a big boy. If you wanted to make it a halacha, you would have made it a halacha. He didn't make it a halacha. We have reasons to be here, even if just to save the Jewish people, etc. Let me take a few questions before we move on to the next piece. Yes.
Again,
that depends how you understand a midrash. It's still a midrash, even if it's halakhic. Meaning, it's Psukim Shir HaShirim. Shlomo HaMelech wrote them. So this happened in Jewish history early on. Okay? Now, what's more likely what happened is this was never a halakha. Chazal were expressing a philosophy that we could debate, and they gave it Psukim in a halakhic framework to make it like every other midrash. But it's not a halacha. Again, the Satmar Rav disagrees with that.
And aren't we generally not supposed to learn halacha from Ketuvim, and like Nevi'im and Ketuvim? Like
Gemara does it all the time. Again, it's not that we're learning, it's not, Chazal might have made it up, but they're basing it on a pasuk, but it still might be halacha. Unless you hold it's not, which is what we said. Yeah. Maybe, yes. Tzitz Eliezer, by the way, says that explicitly. I have a source for that.
The question on that is that the whole situation was only because the British wanted to be in charge. The Jews who were left behind and kicked them out. The British couldn't deal with it and went to the UN and said, what do we do about this Palestine place? And then the UN...
So you might claim that that was a rebellion. Yeah. And we promised the second swearing we're not going to rebel. But that's not exactly what happens, because the Balfour Declaration is before that. The Balfour Declaration gives the Jewish homeland... in the Jewish state. I understand, and the British reneged, but I'm just saying that, etc. By the way, I'll point out one other thing. Even if you hold UN permission, what did the UN give permission for? The partition plan. That doesn't mean you can take over Tzfat. That doesn't mean you can take over Yerushalayim. Where you are sitting right now, or at least, let's be a little more careful, across the street, would be illegal. So it... Okay, and then you can say they broke it, but if that was part of our shvua, we're dependent on the permission. The permission was never changed. The United Nations never changed. The United States recognized the modern state of Israel in its original boundaries. Whoever recognized the modern state of Israel in its new boundaries in Kafa Kamer 1967. We don't have universal recognition for that. So one could claim that's a violation of the Shavuot. Okay? Yes?
What do you mean even the Ramban agrees for the...
That the Megillat Esther, you could read it, even says that even the Ramban never meant to say that in a time when there's the non-Jews or Mamish holding on to us that we can just rebel and leave. No, there's a mitzvah that applies in theory in every generation, but only if the Jewish people have good relationships with their non-Jewish neighbors and we get permission, not that we can... It can still be a mitzvah, but we still can't act on it right now. The same way you have a mitzvah to bring a carbon, but last I checked, you didn't bring it today. Shoot you. Okay, yeah, last question.
What's the encouragement of complacency?
In terms of, the whole Gemara is encouraging. So again, we're brought up in a world that says we're going to push the envelope and Atche Tekpats depends on us, and I'm going to show you that in a minute as well. And that the Geula Dafka happens when we start, and I can give you 100 sources to give you that as well. True. But the counter to that is who said? We know that we're waiting for Mashiach. Now, what is waiting for Mashiach? What's the job of Mashiach? What's his role? What does it mean, the case? And one could claim, as you all claimed at the beginning, oh, case means Mashiach. So I agree with you because I'm brought up as a Zionist. But until you're brought up as a Zionist, that's not a given. And therefore, it's debatable. Okay? Okay. Let's therefore now put this together in terms of tachlis, in terms of Yom HaTzmut, then my funny story, and the closing board. I think we're still going to be okay. I may go 5 minutes over, but I hope we'll be okay. If you hold like the Satmars, and again, I tried to show you without doing every nitpicky source inside, and again, they exist, and you're happy to take this from me in English and work with it if you're so inclined. There's real Makaros, the anti-Zionist approach is real. If you take that approach, then the state of Israel is a sin. Will you live here? Yeah, because it's Eretz Yisrael. Will you vote, pay taxes, or take money from the government? No. Heck no. Now, you shouldn't take money. You might take money from the government, but you shouldn't take... If you take this to its logical conclusion, I, David Katz, can respect you. It's based on Makoros. You're living in Eretz Yisrael because it's Eretz Yisrael. You are not willing to cooperate with this government. Now, the trick is they're still protecting you, so you're etc. And that's why I'm not a Satmar. And you could have that debate. But the concept, and the Satmars don't take money, they have their own private funding for everything, they're not asking for money for yeshivas, nothing. I think that is a source-based legitimate opinion. I disagree with it, I can counter every single argument, but it's not stunning. If you take the Zionist approach, it's the burden of proof is on you, on this Gemara, but I hope you've seen there's so much Torah on this that, and based on a much more original or earlier sources, you can deal with it. And then you quote Han and you say, what, we're supposed to sit around like sheep to the slaughter? Really? Hard to imagine. But what about the middle view? That just says, I don't know, I'm not sure, it's tricky, I'm confused, so I'm just going to ignore it all. Again, you can take that view. But if you say God had nothing to do with it, to be honest, I think that's apikorsis. What do you mean God had nothing to do with it? God had something to do with it. You want to now debate what exactly God's role in all this was, okay. But to say, no, May 15th, 1948, Heyer had nothing to do with God, that's fruit. So I do find that approach problematic. And to be honest, I think it's the lazy approach. God forbid, I'm not calling anyone who takes that and says that they are lazy. Saying conceptually, I think that is a lazy approach. It means, because life is complex, I'm going to make no decisions. Make a decision, be proud of your decision, and validate that there's another side. The same chinuch we tried to give you on everything. You've made decisions. You're all women learning Torah. Well, that's also debatable, so maybe so I'm going to shave the altas and I'm not going to learn until Mashiach comes and tells me. And, interesting, remember, lo yirchaku et hakeis. Don't delay Mashiach. How do we delay Mashiach? By sinning, right? So, I think it's the Maharsha. Says, well, duh, I don't need a Gemara. We promised that already at Har Sinai. That can't be what this Shvua means. So what sin, if we violate it, might delay the Geula, and we better be careful not Yirchaku et hakeis. Zionism. The sin that might be delaying the Kates might be the fourth or the fifth Shvua. Lo Yirchaku et hakeis. Don't delay the ge'ula. When you see the seeds of the ge'ula, run with it. How do you know that this Gemara is telling me, Lamaisa, don't come to Israel at all? Maybe it means you're right, don't come until the seeds are ripe. Achitek pasul, that's true. But once there are seeds, Emecha Kates Magula Mizeh, are your kaku, it's a gula. So my point to you is, there are different ways to look at this. What you do about Yom HaAtzma'ut is going to depend on what approach you take. If you're an anti-Zionist, you are not going to celebrate Yom HaAtzma'ut. I get that. It's okay. We can have all the other debates. I don't need to debate you on that. If you're a non-Zionist, I will debate you because I think you're taking the lazy approach, and I think that there are positives in the land of Israel, even if it's not perfectly positive, but even partial positive still needs an expression. Thank God for the positive, and daven for to fix the negatives. I get all that. But to ignore the day as if it doesn't exist at all, I'm not talking about someone who celebrates it in a different way, but to ignore it as if it doesn't exist at all, I have a hard time with that. And then there's the third approach. If you take the third approach, which is the Zionist approach, now what do? How do I thank God for it? How do I express it? Does it have to be with Hallel, music, dancing? What do you think? Have to. Does it have to be? Maybe not. And therefore, if you're not prepared to allow this philosophy to override the technicals of the halacha, find another way. Go to the barbecue and don't listen to music. I can deal with that. It's the ignoring that I have a problem with. However, why Hallel and why music? There are those who claim that I can't ignore Yom HaAtzma'ut. It's a miracle that I'm living in very real time. In Haggadah class, I'll discuss this, so I'm not going to discuss this now, but there's even a halacha, perhaps, that says if you're witnessing a miracle and living through it in real time, you have an obligation to say Hallel. It's called Az Yashir. Az. In the times of Sancheiriv, when the Jewish people do not thank God for the military victory over Sancheiriv, Chizkiyahu yells at them for not saying Hallel. How dare you not say Hallel when you're benefiting from a live miracle? So there are halakhic reasons why Hallel, yes, becomes appropriate. The question becomes the bracha. Can you say Vitzivanu or not? And there are different opinions on that as well. I don't have time to go through the sources on Hallel right now. And therefore, if you're a Zionist, it is totally reasonable to choose Hallel. You can debate half Hallel, whole Hallel, is it like Rosh Chodesh? Whatever, that's not for now. But Hallel is certainly appropriate. The bracha is questionable. Some people will say it with a bracha. I do not. And if we had a minyan in MMY, I have to assume that the minicure would have been Hallel, probably whole Hallel if I had to guess, but without a bracha. By the way, Hallel without a bracha means not Yahalalucha at the end either. People don't realize that. It's not just the first bracha, but the closing bracha as well, starting with Yalalucha. You would end your Hallel at Hodu, and that would be the end of your Hallel. I think it's totally appropriate. I think you should follow your own minhagim, but know that these are the issues. You'll live. It's a Zionist lizard. It's all good. Okay, girls, we're almost done. I don't want to waste the time. It's cute. It's cute. It's okay. It'll camouflage with the floor. If you want, but you're all big girls. I think you can handle it.
You're not going
to quote a reading, you're a big girl. Make an effort. Okay. You're probably not going to catch him. It's chaval. We have 5 minutes left. And why should we lose the... Okay? You think we can do it? I think we can do it. It's not like a cat in Auschwitz. I think we can... Yeah. It's only a lizard. Okay. Sfira, the issue is trickier. Why? Because I can always say Hallel without a bracha, although that's not so simple either. Not for now, but bonagi. But Sfira, either I listen to music on a Yom HaTzmut or I don't. If you're celebrating... because this is a Yom Chag, for all the philosophic and halakhic even reasons that we spoke about, then it makes perfect sense that that overrides the Minhagim of Sfira, because the Minhagim of Sfira are Minhagim. And I have Minhagi Avelos, and they're true, but now I have a conflict because I have a halakha even of Shabbat to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I need to balance those things. And therefore, the Psak in MMY is, in fact, that music on Yom HaAtzma'ut overrides the Minhagim of Sfira. Rabbi Tversky will give you a whole shiur to kind of put Minhagim of Sfira in a little bit of perspective. I don't know if we have to go that far. I think Minhagim of Sfira should be taken seriously, as you see, but Yom Ha'atzmaut, if you follow in the Zionist camp, again, can very easily override Sphira, and that has been the psak in MMY. But again, if that's not your psak, you can, as long as you're expressing to God in another way, yesh bazeh. I don't shave on Yom Ha'atzmaut. I listen to music. Why? I won't go to a movie on Yom Ha'atzmaut just for fun, but I'll have music as part of my chagiga. See the difference? Unless it's not, in my opinion, it's not a day off of Sphira. It's Sphira. But as part of my Yom Ha'atzmaut celebrations, you need to, music as part of celebrating. It's life. Others disagree. Rev Rimon holds you can even shave, and Sphira's gone, get married on Yom Ha'atzmaut. Well, go to a movie. You'll work it out. But in other words, you can do those things. So there are different approaches there. I'd say, I know. But it's not after Pesach Sheni. But anyway, so that's the... So that's either face seconds. Okay. Anyway, but that's anyway. That's so that's part of that discussion. That's part of that discussion as well. So the psak in MMY is Hallel Lefim Min Hagchem. Although if you're asking logic what to do, I would advise Hallel without a bracha. But again, those who have been saying it all their life with a bracha, Yesh Olim Smoke. Those that don't say Hallel at all, find another venue to express to God. Write poetry if you want. I don't think you have to be guilted into Hallel. Again, because it's the philosophy, not the halacha per se. In terms of Sphira, the psak here is music, live music, as part of the celebrations. I will just tell you one story on this. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, when he was in Chicago, did not have music at the Yom Ha'atzmaut celebrations in Chicago. His son makes aliyah to Beit Shemesh. I daven in his shul. This is in the early years of Ramat Beit Shemesh. And they announced the Yom Ha'atzmaut program. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik is still alive. And they announced that we're participating in the citywide festivities with the music and the dancing, etc. So his son turns to the father and says, I don't get it, Dad. I was brought up in Chicago all these years, no music. All of a sudden, music. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, his son, quotes him and says, he said, and again, Americans don't take offense to this, but says, when we were in America, we were spectators. It wasn't a real celebration. We were armchair Zionists. So you know, what's a nice day in the calendar? We'll say, Hallel without a bracha, but Sira? But when you're in Israel, it's part of your life. It's a real, genuine, authentic celebration. Of course we have to have music. So I'm not telling you when you're in Chutz La'aretz next year not to listen to music. I would listen to music in Chutz La'aretz too. I'm just giving that as perspective. And I'm not calling you armchair Zionists. Well, we can talk about that another time. But I'm just putting that perspective out there that if you tap into it, if it's not just a day off from school, we're going to go barbecue and park and have fun. But it's a real chag. Then that has ramifications halakhically as well, leheter, and you should, in theory, embrace that. Last piece. I just running out of time, you'll have to ask me afterwards. Last piece. Fun story. I just gave you a shiur with a source sheet. I prepared this shiur again over Yom Tov and over Shabbos, and I didn't have a source sheet. I gave the shiur the first time in my life last year, and I didn't have a source sheet, and I didn't have a file, and I didn't find a source sheet, and I didn't recall using a source sheet. So I said, I guess last year I gave the shiur at the last minute. I didn't prepare a sort. Impossible to imagine, but I guess you can't have the shiur without reading the Gemara, though. So either I photocopied just the Gemara for them and gave it out, I don't remember, or I read it to them without actually showing it to them. Because I don't have a source sheet. Okay, this year I'm going to make a source sheet, and that's why I prepared on Sunday, Saturday night, and then Sunday when I came, well, Monday night and Tuesday when I came into school, this source sheet. Immediately after cutting and pasting and finding my source sheet, I opened up my Yom Ha'atzmaut, Yom HaShoah, Yom Yerushalayim folder. And the very top page was last year's source sheet. And it has the exact same sources. Exact. So I felt good that I prepared this year the way I prepared last year was all good. Except there was one more source that I hadn't photocopied. And it's so beautiful. And I don't know where I found it. And I don't know who said it. But I cried. So I said, if it was worthy of my tears, I'm going to end the shiur this way. On the source sheet, the new one that I'm giving you, there was one other difference besides this one Midrash Rabbah in Shir HaShirim. There was an extra pasuk in the Shavuot. I gave you the three Hishpati Etchem Benot Yerushalayim. In Perek Bet, if you look on the top left of the sheet that's going on now, after the Hishpati Etchem, there's another pasuk that many of you know because it's a song. Right after, in Ta'iru v'in Ta'oru v'ta'avad shetekpats, says Shlomo HaMelech, Kol dodi hine zeba. Midalega ha'arim kapetzo ha'gva'ol. The voice of my beloved. All of Shir HaShirim is a metaphor of galud and geula, dod and raya. Kol dodi, my beloved, the geula, hine zeba, it's coming. Midalega ha'arim, he's jumping and skipping over the mountains. Mikapetzo ha'gva'ol, jumping over the valleys. Domed dodi litzvi ola ofer ha'ayalim. My beloved is like a deer. I think I quoted this after the pigua. My beloved is like a deer or an ibex. Hineza omeda har kaslenu. My beloved God is standing behind the wall. Notice the kotel is standing behind the wall. Mashkiach min hachalonot. He's peeking through the windows. Meitzitz minha, and his awareness min hacharakim. He's looking through the lattice work. He's looking through the little holes. Says the Midrash on the Pasuk of Kol Dodi Hinei Zebah, and I remind you, it's right after the Shalosh Shavuot. It's the next Pasuk. I'll paraphrase it, but it's here for you. The Midrash wants to know, who's the Dodi? Kol Dodi Hinei Zebah. Second line, Rabbi Huda Omer, Kol Dodi Hinei Zebah, Ze Moshe. It means Moshe. B'Shah Shabbah V'Yamar LeYisrael, B'Chodesh Zeh Atem Nigalim. Moshe is the Dodi. And he comes to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim and he says, Hinei Zebah! It's coming! And the Jewish people, now I'm going to paraphrase, the Jewish people say, no, that's not possible. See, we're halakhicists. It was Bris Ben Abisarim. God said 400 years. It's only been 210. We can count. Moshe, you're lying. And Moshe responds. And Moshe responds. This is the Medrash. Moshe responds. No, no, no. Midaleg al Heharim. God is skipping. He's skipping the part of the process. You're right. He said 400 years. But it's coming early. God wants you back. Don't ask me kashas from Nebuas. It's time. And then the Medrash quotes another example. It's Moshe again. And the Jewish people say, it's not possible. We're worshiping Avodah Zarah. We all know the Gemara that says the Geula needs tshuva. We paskin that you can't have Geula without tshuva. We haven't done tshuva. We're all worshiping idols. Moshe, you're lying. And again, Moshe says, Mikapetzel hagvot. No, no, no. Don't give me halacha. Don't give me Jewish philosophy. It's time. God is skipping part of the process. And then the next thing, he says, what do you mean? We don't have any merits. Ein lanu ma'asim tovim. We're horrible people. Moshe again says, don't tell me that. And then it goes on. And it says, who's the Dodi? It's Mashiach. And again, the Jewish people say, it can't be. It can't be Mashiach because, God, you said we're going to be in Golus more. We're going to have to be subjugated. Or I'm connecting it now to the Shalosh Shavuot because it's the next Pasuk. You just told me there's Shalosh Shavuot. You just told me I have to wait. It's a halakha. It's black on white. And says the Medrash, don't give me black on white. Open your eyes. God wants you back. Mikapetz al hagvaot. Look, and look at the pasuk. He's midalei. He's skipping the process. It's time. Domed dodi litzvi ola ofer ha'ayalim. I quoted this after the pigua. It's like a deer. It looks like when you have a deer on a far mountain. If you're on a teyul, let's say in Ein Gedi. And then you look a minute later and the deer is gone. And you think that the deer has run away. He hasn't run away. He's just dipped down into the valley. And he's going to come up on the next closest mountain. Just right now, he's in the valley. You can't see him. Domed dodi litzvi. The geula is like a deer. Ola ofer ha'ayalim. Look at what's going on out those windows. Hine ze omeid achar katlenu mashkiach menachalonot. Look at Israel history. God is behind it all. He's hiding. If you open the curtain, if you peek, if you wash the window a little bit to look through the dust, there's a lot of dust in this country. It's hard to see. Yes. But don't throw gemaras at me. Anyone who can see, can see. On Yom HaAtzmaut night, you are going to read in Merkaz HaRav, Tehillim Kuf Zayin. If you were in Mrs. Elson's class, I think you already learned it. If you aren't or hadn't from the first semester, before you go to Merkaz HaRav, open that Perek in Tehillim and read it. Kuf Zayin. It's all about how history, in essence. It's the source for Birkas HaGomel. You're going to be destroyed, but it's okay. God is going to save you when you least expect it. And it goes through the four examples of Birkas HaGomel. Chayim. midbar and you sort the whole thing. And then at the end, there's a section that has nothing to do with anything. And it's once again how God is going to save you. It's going to be difficult. Maybe there'll be some downsides to it. Maybe there'll be a Shoah in the middle. But in the end of the day, it all works out. God is going to... This is the Tehillim that we say on Yom HaAtzmaut. The last line of that parak in Tehillim. Mi chacham v'yavin et eleh v'yidbananu chasdei Hashem. Who is the wise person? The wise person who is the person who can look at the world. Mi chacham v'yavin et eleh v'yidbananu and understand chasdei Hashem. You can't always see chasdei Hashem because there's a Shoah in the middle. And there's a pigua in the middle, and it's two steps forward, one step back. Domed do dilit svi. Yes. But mi chacham v'yavinat eleh. 2 years ago, when there was the aseret tefillah against the government, when there was the aseret tefillah against the government, where when they were passing the law of yeshiva boys having to go to the army, so NMY did not go. Some individual teachers did. And they brought back the tefillah so that we would see how it wasn't anti-government, it was just the tefillah again. I saved it. I thought it was incredibly paradoxical that one of the tefillah, the main tefillah, that they said that tefillah against the modern state of Israel was Tehillim Kuf Zayin. And I highlighted it. Mi chacham v'yachinet eleh v'yidbonenu chasdei Hashem. There's another side to this discussion. I think I've expressed it. But in the end of the day, this is personal now. And again, this medrash, I think, expresses it so beautifully. Mi chacham v'yavinet eleh. I don't want to know from Mishal HaShavua. I'll learn it, I'll discuss it, I hear it. But when I, David Katz, open my eyes out there, even when I can't see it, I see the tzvi. And I just hope for all of you and for the rest of Klal Yisrael that if not today, tomorrow, or the next day, we'll see it as well. I'll take questions privately. I'm here. Meron Lechama, I think we need to...